Blog Talk Radio.
Because of reliance shall break every chain. Conquering lion shall break every chain. Give him the victory again and again.
Your host, Brother Drew X. We're calling off at Black Nation Task Force Radio. And our host tonight will be out no other than G.G. Woods. We've got other guests going to be on tonight with us also. The caller lines are full, so everybody that can't get in, you have to listen to the link. All right, let me get G.G., if you're on the phone, push 1. And then I guess if you're on the phone, push 1, because I got to find you guys' number. Then press 1 on your phone if you're a guest tonight. Yeah, right. There go GG. All right, GG, your line is open.
Thank you, Brother Drew. I don't know if our guest is going to make it or not, but we're going to leave the line open, and we'll just hope that he's able to contribute this evening.
Okay, I do see the last two digits on her. I'm not sure if that's the guess, but I do see the digits.
Mm-hmm. Well, he may be trying to get through.
Just press 1 if you're a guest on the line. Just press 1 on your phone, and it lights the screen up for me. All right, go ahead, Gigi.
Okay. As always, Brother Drew, thank you for all that what you do. And again, I'm GZ Wood, and the show that we're listening to this evening is called The List. The concept of the show is if you were able to give your young self advice based on everything you've experienced up to present day, what advice would you give yourself? From that, we developed this creation that we call The List in hopes of distributing it to the young people as a means of guidance and assistance to help them along their journey, to make it a lot easier for them than it was for us. You know, mentorship, solving a lot of problems that we know that they're going to encounter because we encountered them. So we've got the solutions. So we offer those solutions, again, in the form of The List. Okay, I just got a message from the guest, and I don't know if he's trying to get through or not, Brother Drew. You might want to check on him again. But in the meantime, I'm just going to cover a bunch of topics and give him an opportunity to show. If not, we'll just continue on with the show.
I think he might be on, GG, and I hate to interrupt you. I think he might be on 214 area code, last two digits of 97. You on? What would be the guest name, GG, if you can call him? I think he's on, though. He might have his phone muted.
That would be Brother Tafari.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, you
can hear me, bro. Can hear you, bro.
Okay. All right, I can hear me. Okay. Hotel, everyone. How y'all doing this evening?
Hotel.
Doing good, brother. Glad you can make it.
Hey, I had to be here.
Let me briefly go into the topic that the brother's going to discuss with us. That first submission from The List is the change over your name. And
okay, and
the brother Safari is going to lend some insight on why that's so significant, as well as the representation of that Moorish point of view about why your claiming of your nationalism is so significant. And brother, if you ready, I'll just yield a mic to you and let you present what you have to present, you know, on a monologue, and then we'll get into a dialogue afterwards.
Okay. Well, let's start. Let's look at. Let's go back. Listen to Malcolm X when he broke away from the Nation of Islam, and I don't know if you know anything about that, but that's when he started. That's when he went to Mecca and returned, and that's when he started finding out about nationalism. And for us as a race of people, you have to understand all the things that has happened to where they basically took our names, they took our birthrights, they took everything they could do so we can identify ourselves as a people, as a nation. And if you don't know the significance of it, because if you go to the General Assembly, and this was redone in 2007, and it tells you, you have the right to claim a nationality. And people don't know the difference between nationality, as well as they don't know the difference between being called black or black American or white American or whatever, because white and black is an adjective which only describes the color of what it is. So when you say you black and you go into the dictionary and you look up the word black, black means bad and evil. So in turn, or in essence, you basically calling yourself bad or you evil, and they don't respect you as a human being. because you have no nationality that you can connect with because they stole our birthrights. Now, with that being said, the only way you can, or let me say, I ain't gonna say the only way, but one of the major reason or is you have to claim a nationality in order to free yourself from a system what some people call the Matrix. Now, I don't know if y'all heard about the Dred Scott case versus Sanford in 1857. Well, in that particular case, when he presented this case to the judge, and the judge basically said, listen, you don't have a nationality. You keep wanting to identify as being black American or Afro-American. Well, if you know your family history, like I know mine, we didn't come from Africa. So why you want to say you're still African-American when you're not? And the only way you can find that, you got to go to your family. You got to trace the history. So, anyway, back to nationality. Back to Malcolm X, like I said, when he went to Mecca and he came back, that's when he started discussing or talking about Malcolm X and how important it is about nationality. You have to know that claiming that, basically telling the world that you are human and you have the right to be who you are, not just as a color. See, every day we walk around when I identify ourselves being this color, and which they already know what that means when they go into the dictionary. And if you go into etymology, you look at the word black. Black means pale, which is white. But a lot of people don't understand that because we don't take out the time to read. So with that being said, it is very vital that we claim that nationality, whether if you want to say you are more, or if you want to claim you're American Indian, or whatever you decide you want to claim yourself, you have to do your due diligence, and you got to find out who you are from your family traits. And stop saying you came from Africa when you didn't. Again, they stole our birthrights. They stole our names. They gave us a religion. They did all this thing to us to where we can identify ourselves. So I yield with that, and I give it back to you. Open for questions.
All right. There was a point where you and I were talking about the 13th and 14th Amendment.
Yes.
And you were making some points about the 13th and 14th Amendment. Could you go over that again just a little bit for the listening audience, because those points were very significant.
Okay. Well, let me start off the word citizen. Everybody has been told that you're a citizen of this country, but no one ever told you where to go find that information at. So there's several ways where you can find it. You can go to legal.com, or you can pick up a legal law dictionary, third, fourth, and fifth edition Black Law Dictionary, or any dictionary law book. But if you look at the word citizen, and you can Google this, go have the time to Google, do your research. And if you go to Section 3 when it says citizen, and it says all natives are not citizens of the United States. The descendants of the aborigines and those of African origins are not entitled to the rights of citizens anterior to the adoption of the Constitution of the United States. Each state has the right to make citizen of such person as it please. That Constitution does not authorize any but white persons to become citizens of the United States. And it must therefore be presumed that no one is a citizen who is not white.
Now,
that's the word.
Brother, for the listening audience, because I'm guessing that what you just said, grab
mm-hmm.
the attention of some people just for educational purposes. Would you please,
right,
one more time, read that passage.
Okay. All right. Citizen. Everybody think they're a citizen of the United States of America, of this country. And when you go up, look up the word citizen, like I said, you can Google, do a research. You can get a law dictionary, or you can go to legal.com app, and you look up the word citizen, and you go to section. And as it states, all natives are not citizens of the United States, and the descendants of the Aborigines and those of African origin are not entitled to the rights of citizens anterior to the adoption of the Constitution of the United States. Each state has the right to make citizens of such persons as it pleased. The Constitution does not authorize any but white persons to become citizens of the United States, and it must therefore be presumed that no one is a citizen who is not white.
You can stop right there. You can stop right there because that's in the United States Constitution.
That's what it's
in
saying.
Black and white.
Black and white. Like I said, you can do
it's in black and white. You just quoted where it's in the United States Constitution. For the listening audience, anybody who doubts, you know, he just backed that up with the formal documentation. You can go and see for yourself with your own two eyes, put it in your own mental court. Now, what I'd like to add to that is a little something that I pulled up in Black Laws Dictionary, which says, so far as legal theory is concerned, a person, and this is a formal definition of a person that's recognized by law, a person is any being whom the law regards as capable of rights and duties. Now, that says whom the law regards. Now, who decides law? The federal government oversees the states, and in this case, the brother just stated that it's the states, the individual states, who basically decide whether or not you are a citizen. So claiming your nationality, I believe, and I'm sure you will have something to add to this, especially if I get it wrong. I believe that claiming your nationality, because under this treaty, I believe it's called the Treaty of Friendship and something else. What's the name of the treaty that I'm trying to speak of?
Oh, it's Treaty of Peace of Friendship.
Peace
and Treaty
Friendship.
That was, that's it.
Okay. Now, under that treaty, if you claim your nationalism, then you're protected throughout the nation, which in essence trumps this right given to the individual states by the federal government. Did I get that right?
Yeah, so much, yeah. So many words, yes,
okay. Okay. Now, I have a question to ask you that I've asked before, and I'm just asking not so much expecting an answer any different from the answer that you've given me previously, but I just want to put this question out or pose this question in front of the listening audience so they'll entertain the question. And this particular question is this. If the Treaty of Peace and Friendship, which has been established between Morocco and the United States. Am I saying that right?
That's correct.
If the treaty of peace and friendship that's established between Iraq and the United States is valid and is honored, like I'm told it's supposed to be, even to this mm-hmm. day, because it is being renewed. Is that correct?
That is correct. They renew it every 50 years. Yes.
Okay, if it's being renewed, then by claiming that nationality, again, you're protected by this treaty. But the question that I have for my brother and for the Moore Nation is that if this is true, then when a child is born, instead of crippling a child with a social security number, which ties that child to the straw man, I believe I'm using the right terminology.
Okay.
The child's, yeah. Instead of, and giving that child that name and that social and the birth certificate as well, right? And the birth
name,
certificate.
Yeah. Yes.
Why not, when a child is born, take the child to the Moore's consulate, which there's a consulate here in the United States. Did I get that correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Take the child to the consulate, have the officials at the consulate declare that child's nationality at birth, and that child should be born free and protected by this treaty of peace and friendship. I believe that's a effective method if these things all exist, as I'm being told. And I believe that will be an effective way of freeing the children in the future, changing the school of thought and everything else that's associated with being exploited by the capitalist system that we fall up under present day. So, brother, I thank you for your contribution this evening.
More than
and, if you have any other remarks you'd like to add at this time, feel free. If you have anything you'd like to contribute, you know, that you may come up with as the show goes on, feel free.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, you're welcome to stay on the line as long as you like. You are welcome guests in our home. So put your feet up.
I appreciate that. Thank you, sir. Well, I do have some other things to add with that the last statement. Now, from the research and through my journey, you go to the consulate with that information, but at the same time, you still have to put it on the record, on their record, on their end. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because even though you go do your part and take it where it needs to go, but you still have to put it on their record so they can file it and they'll have it.
When you say go to whose part and put it on whose record?
Say, for an example, you take it to a notary. The notary's going to mm-hmm. notarize that information, the
mm-hmm.
certificate of live birth. And when you get your mm-hmm. certificate of live birth, you go down to the county that you live in, all right, and you put it on a record and have it stamped. Well, it's already stamped by the notary, but you take it and give it to them, and what they're going to do, they're going to give it a number, and they're going to put it in the filing system so you know it's on a record. Or
are we talking about a newborn?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry, the newborn. Yes, the newborn.
Okay.
Now, that's what I, you have to put it on a record. I mean, even though you go through the concert, but you still got to put it on the record because you want them to know that, hey, this is the child under the Morris Nation, blah, 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 blah. So when it's filed, they'll see it. So if anything was to ever come up in the past, there it is. You have more than one way to pull it up.
Okay.
But to change the subject real quick.
Go ahead.
Now, Brian, let me change the subject real quick. When I read you the Citizen of the United States, and I got this back in 2007 when a friend of mine that sent me a something on Facebook, and it was about this lawyer, and this lawyer said, hey, this is the reason why they get away with killing us in the streets. And I think the guy who lost his life at the time was, I think his last name was Brown, who was in Missouri that got killed. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
It was so long ago. But anyway, but when I saw that and I read it, I said, wait a minute.
Now hold on, brother, because I don't know. I don't know if it's on my end and I'm experiencing a little difficulty hearing you, or if you, getting away from your mic on your end. But the clarity
that's
of your...
Okay.
I just want to jump in there, so... Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, you hear me good? Okay. Yeah, but anyway, to add to that Citizen of the United States, a lot of people don't know about the this paper that was back in April the 9th, 1864, and it was the Congressional Globe, and it states in there, if you go to Section 12, it says the traffic in slaves with Africa is hereby forever prohibited on pain of death and the forfeiture of all the rights and property of persons engaged therein, and the descendants of Africans should not be citizens.
Now, I'll try to follow that, and I think maybe I've missed something.
Okay. Let me read it to you again. Now, this is in the Congressional Globe. This is a newspaper. It was dated back April 9th, 1864. And if you go to, it was actually the 28th Congressional First Session. Okay? And if you go to Section 12, and this is what it states. It says the traffic in slaves with Africa is hereby forever prohibited on pain of death and the forfeiture of all the rights and property of persons engaged therein, and the descendants of Africans should not be citizens.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, that was in 29.
This is dated back April the 9th, 1864.
Oh, 64. 1864.
Yeah.
Okay. See, my history, I'm not a great history person. And when we talk about dates and the chronological order of them, which is a something that the elders on this show emphasizes, the understanding of how to take these things and put them in a chronological order so you won't miss anything.
Right.
My question, because, again, the dates are what are eluding me, is that in comparison to when the part of the amendment was the Constitution was amended to where slavery was abolished was in what year? And I'm pulling out the Constitution as we speak because, and let me get my glasses because I got old.
What did you actually say that?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Hey, I own it. I got these whiskers. These are my stripes. I earned them. These great whiskers, these are my stripes. I earn them and I flaunt them with pride. Where is the abolishment of slavery? What year did that take place? And just in comparison to what you just stated, that took place in 1868,
yeah,
wasn't it? The slavery.
This is the Congressional Globe paper back in April 9, 1864, and it was on the 38th Congress first session.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what they put in the paper. This is from the first session.
Okay. Oh, that was the first session of the first Congress.
Well, I don't know about the first Congress, but it says the first session of the 38th Congress.
Okay, 38th Congress. Okay, okay.
Yeah, 38th Congress.
Okay. So,
but
1868 is the number that's ringing in my head. I think that's when the Emancipation Proclamation happened, and it was executed in January of 1869. And I'm just rambling off dates. Y'all can fact check me on that, but I believe those dates are accurate. I tell you something that was. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead, continue on.
Okay. Yeah, something that was significant happened after the Civil War was over when they did the first census, which.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. I should have looked that up before I even went into it. But when the first census was done, the first U.S. census was done,
mm-hmm.
they destroyed those records.
That's right.
They burnt that place down. And
right.
if I'm not mistaken, and see, this is where I would have to get the dates and put them in a chronological order. If I'm not mistaken, the Ku Klux Klan was formed shortly thereafter. And for the next 10 years, they went to work diminishing those numbers. Because when those people were freed, they had the numbers in the South. Because the plantation setup was you had your people who were going to profit, you know, and then you had an abundance of workers, and the workers outnumbered the profiteers, you know. I don't
mm-hmm.
know about how many times, but the numbers were with them. So when they were all free and empowered with the right to vote, they were sending their people to the government, they were holding government offices down in the South, but they were also sending their people to the United States Congress and the Senate. So, so they destroyed those numbers and went to work to reduce that political dominance that the people, the melanated people in the South would have. And, of course, they ran them off the land. You know, the great compromise of the date that comes in my head, and I don't even want to recite the date because I may be so off base, it's not funny. But the great compromise when the South succeeded the presidential election to the North in exchange for the North to withdraw those federal troops out of the South, because they had martial law in the South protecting those free people who the Union soldiers gave all that confiscated land to. So these people were building and prospering in the South. And when the North pulled those federal troops out, again, this all of these dates should be right around the same time. The burning of the census, the compromise where they pulled the troops out and where the Klan with the work destroying what these people have built, what people who look like me and you built, because the point of those, one significant thing about all of the free people at that time, they were all skilled laborers. They all knew how to produce from the land. They knew how to carpenters. You know, they were blacksmiths. This is what they did every day while they were enslaved. So now that they are free, they already have the skill set. They're selling their talents, because now this person who used to just take from them unjustly and reward them with no wages, you know, no rights, no nothing, now he has to pay for these services. And they were thriving. They were thriving as a communities, and they were building a nation, the inner nation, basically returning to the nation that they already, to the nation that they once were, because they were already here. It was already their nation before the invaders came in and conquered and, you know, stole the lands like they did. So,
well,
you know, go ahead.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. They did come in and steal the land. Like, they steal everything else. One of the main, and this is my opinion, I think one of the main things that really hurt us as a people is that we always listen to a third source but never try to find out the true facts. To find out the true facts of what is being said. And I be one of the first to admit it when I was young. Yeah, I did. But as I start getting older, I start realizing what everything that was being said is not always true. You got to do your due diligence. You got to find out for yourself. And if you really want to know the truth, you have to read. You have to do the research. You have to go to more than one source. You can't just rely on someone that's telling you something, because when you break down history, history is his story. And as long as I've been on this earth, we've been listening to their story about our history. And with that being said, you can take people from another continent, and they'll tell you more about our history than we know about ourselves.
And that's amazing when you think about it, because they know the truth, and when we speak with them, it doesn't take them long to either figure out this individual that's talking to me is truly knowledgeable about his history, or he's ignorant. And usually when they categorize you as ignorant about your own history, the respect for you diminishes rapidly. The desire to want to be around you diminishes quickly, because you're trapped in an ignorant place. And people who know their history, you know, who are culturally proud, they carry themselves in a different manner. I was speaking with a gentleman today. I give you an example. I was speaking with a gentleman today who was from India, and he came over here And he was telling me his story, how he came over here with $100. He had $100, one $100 bill, and a bag of clothes. That's what he had. And today he lives in a house that's on the market, value is probably about $350,000 or closer to $500,000 that he has almost completely paid for. You know, he has put his daughter through college. She is working on her doctorates, and he is in no debt. He does not believe in debt. You know, we have this discussion all the time. Mm-hmm. His culture, just the way they think, they squeeze every penny to pay up front because they don't believe in debt. You know, you go without. So the end game, now you celebrate, you know, mm-hmm. and you put in that work. You put in that work so your children and your children's children will have a much easier road. But even in that, he instilled the right values in his children and his grandchildren. You know, they're not wasteful people. And they don't take anything for granted, and they invest. They invest in their children, you know, like they should. And he's a good example of what can be done if you stay within your disciplines and you focus and you finish. You know. So, but let me switch gears real quick, because there was some things I wanted to touch on about. We had a bunch of submissions last month, and I was going to touch on a few. But looking at the clock on the wall, I'm going to kind of bypass that and go to the new ones from this month, which one of them I want to take, I want to read something from this book. And, you know, your comments on this will be a welcome and value if you like to add to it. This is a book a brother passed on to me. It's called The Ten Commandments of Black Economic Power. And the doctor, Boyce Watkins is the brother's name. And I'm just going to go through his. Okay, are you? Okay, I'm going to go through his Ten Commandments real quick. Commandment one, always be an asset to your family. Commandment two is buy black whenever possible. And then, let's see, three is black wealth training must be a rite of passage. And I want to get back on that one a little later, because I couldn't agree more with that brother on that. Number four is create fertile economic soil for your family.
Mm-hmm.
Five, invest in healthy relationships and maintain them. That's word to the wise, because building relationships and tearing them apart and building new ones, I mean, you never, the substance isn't there. Quality relationships happen over time. Let me keep moving before I get on the soapbox. Number six, keep it all in the family when possible. Now he's talking about money. You know, keeping that wealth within the family when impossible. And I think his family, what he's saying, is not brother, sister, cousin, you know, but family as a people, family.
Okay.
I'm hoping that's what he's saying. I hadn't actually read that commandment, so I don't know exactly if that's what he means, but I hope he does. Seven is capital must be preserved, protected, and efficiently used. Again, I was just making an example with the guy from India, and you can see what happens when you do that. Number eight is always plant seeds for the future. Number nine is always leave a worthy inheritance. We as a people can get, we are so guilty on that point of not passing that wealth on. And then finally, number 10 is ownership is the key to power. Ownership is the key to power. So those are the Ten Commandments from this book called The Ten Commandments of Black Economic Power by Dr. Boyce Watkins. If you are impressed by those Ten Commandments, pick up a copy of his book. He's also got a website, www.boyswatkins.com, that you can probably go and make your online purchases.
Right.
The part that I wanted to dispute, just off the brief readings of his book, there was one comment that he made that just, and I'm glad that you're here to give your opinion on this. He says that your family members are a form of human capital that is often neglected when we go our separate ways, cut each other off, undermine each other's successes, and don't support one another. I don't have a problem with what he stated in there. I have a problem with the term that he used, human capital. And I've had this debate with my own family members. I just personally don't believe that humans and capitals should ever be combined to form anything. There is no such thing as human capital. The term human capital is a law. It's something, it's almost like socialism is a word that comes to mind, and I want to read something that I took off the internet to kind of back up what I'm saying. It was about what happened with Apple in China. Let me see where I have those notes. Because, and I want to actually read from it. But let me ask you, while I'm looking this information up, what's your opinion on that word, human capital? As a matter of fact, Brother Drew, I would like to know your opinion on human capital. Am I just so, because my family member, you know, he went through the phone and looked up human capital as being defined as these people with these skills in the workplace. It's because of the skills that these people have, they are viewed as human capital. I said, no, humans, before I give you my opinion, give me yours. And Brother Drew, if you're listening and want to chime in with your opinion before I give my opinion, I'd also like to hear yours. Go ahead, bro.
Okay. Well, first of all, you got to define what capital is in the law dictionary. And once you're able to understand what capital means, if you look it up in the this is Black Law Dictionary, 4th edition, and you look at the word capital, and it means the word have different meanings when used in different connections. Also, it says capital, which is the adjective, affecting or relating to the head or life of a person, entailing the ultimate personality, principal, leading, chief, as capital. I can understand why he used the word human capital, because also when you look at the Social Security, which is the straw man, you are looked as stock, as capital, human capital. That's how they look at you as stock. But
okay,
you have to define the word to get a better understanding. Because even if you look up the word capital stock, it says has various meanings. It depends how you're using it.
So are you okay with the term, or so do you or what is your opinion of the term? In your opinion, is that okay, human capital,
well,
or is it?
Well, it depends how you want to use it, because you know what a human is. You break down you color man, so you understand where that is. But if you, like I said, if you go into the law of dictionary, that's what it says. But it all depends
okay.
how you making the connection, how you using it, and whatever it is that you're saying. I don't agree with it. I personally don't like it. But if you understand how you have to know law to have a better understanding to address the situation on a lawfully level, yeah. But if you're not, then okay, shouldn't matter.
Brother Drew, you want to contribute all
right,
to
that? Yeah, I chime in on that also. I see human capital, if I'm looking at it in a different, you can look at it in a different angles, right? One human capital could be considered the workforce. Another word of human capital could be considered forced labor, slavery. What's that, sex trafficking? I mean, so when you say human, I mean, that's one thing about the American language. It's so bastardized, you really don't know what the hell they're talking about. So you have to be you have to kind of use your own definition sometime, because you know, they'll tell us it's human capital. We mean in the economical standpoint, but in the second language they're talking to their buddies, and they're talking a different language. They're talking in the Masonic codes. You see what I'm saying? So human capital could be a Masonic code word, mean slavery again, bondage. You know, using other people to do the work. You know, that's I mean, so there's so many ways people use words, but, you know, this English language has many bastardized meanings. So, but as far as if I heard the word human capital, I would think somebody is saying that they see me as money. That's what I would think. So I get right there.
Okay, and I would agree with you on in the terms of when someone says human capital, I'm thinking that they're thinking monetary gains. Now, and I'm totally against the use of the word human capital, because humans have rights. Capital has no rights. And when you take something that has no rights and combine it with someone who does have rights, that leaves a door open, just starts opening that door of exploitation, where all of a sudden, you know, all of a sudden your employers are overly invasive with their practices, or starting to require more and more of the employee because they value that capital, not that human. So I think it's a slippery slope, this term, human capital. Now, the example that I have to support my argument is the example that happened in China, the city called, and I know I'm going to get this pronunciation wrong, L-O-N-G-H-U-A. That's the name of the city that's in China, which is where the iPhones were made. And back in 2010, the workers started killing themselves. Now, let me explain to you to what extent this was happening. And then I'm going to show you how companies address things like human capital, which is why I'm so alarmed by it. Okay, I'm trying to find the actual articles because I want to read from it. It says, let's see, today the numbers. Okay, in 2010, assembly line workers began killing themselves. It says that worker after worker threw themselves off of the dorm buildings because what they were doing in China, they were working these people 80, 70, just unrealistic hours. And all these people did was work, go home and rest, find any moment for anything else, you know, but it was going to be brief because they working 80-hour weeks. And you say that the epidemic caused a media sensation, and they got a hold of the story, and that's kind of how I'm, why I'm reading this. And it said that the people would leave suicide notes telling about the immense stress, the long work days, and the harshness of the managers who would humiliate them when they make mistakes and things like that. And of fines, now you're taking their money, and unkept promises of benefits. So the corporate response, and this is the part that I see as so significant, the corporate response, the corporate response spurred further unease is what they said, because what the corporation did to solve the problem of the people jumping off the buildings to commit suicide was to install large nets on the outside of the buildings to catch the falling people and put their ass right back to work because they are human capital.
Hmm.
I cannot support that term, human capital. That's going to lead to socialism in a big way.
Well,
Dr. Boyce Watkins, brother, I applaud what you have written, but I have to voice my concern about that term that you decided to use, and I hope you will, you know, reconsider that going forward. So go ahead, bro. I'm sorry.
If you don't mind. Well, let me go back to the very beginning. I think a lot of people don't understand the word black, which is an adjective. We have been so conditioned to use that word so loosely, not understanding you keep degrading yourself when you use that word, and no matter how you use that word. And for him to use it as a black Ten Commandments, that's you still degrading yourself. You still disrespecting yourself. And we have to get away from the word black.
Okay.
Because you got to understand what the word means. Because if you want them to respect you, you got to learn how to respect yourself. If you want someone to really listen to what you're trying to say, you got to stop using that color.
Because
that's the only way you're going to gain respect, and that's the only way you're going to get people to listen to you. Because if you go on to a higher knowledge of understanding, tell you what black means. When you go to etymology, mm-hmm. black is means white, black means pale, which is white. Like an example would be, people don't realize you marching saying Black Lives Matter, but you're not realizing that what you're saying is White Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
But we gotta get away from the word black. You're not black. Black in the dictionary is bad and evil. And for not only him, but many others, we continue to use this word black. You're disrespecting yourself.
Well, the elders always say that the people who sport the doctor's degrees and the various degrees, because they have been learned or they have been taught by the oppressor to basically become them. They are a product. Yeah, they are a product of the system. So his school of thought is going to be in line with that of the oppressors. Yeah. You know, he is of that school of thought now because he has graduated and he's well versed in it. So the unchanging of the teaching completely, we have to unteach ourselves and reteach ourselves in order to break away from the ways that we've been taught all our lives. You know, it's a lot easier to start with children because their minds are fresher and less polluted.
All right.
But who teaches them? You know, because the mind that's going to teach them is one that's been polluted.
Yeah.
Right. Let me jump in there with y'all on that, Gigi. Well, you said something that was, you know, profound, as when you said, like the PhDs and the people who are so educated, they give to us as leaders. Now, one thing I wanted to just say, when you see they say the first black president, when you see they say the first black general, what that means is a conquered mind, because in order to be the first to get in the higher level of the government, you have to be submitted to them. You won't get in unless they know they got your mind already conquered. So when you see these, the black first, these people have been conquered. So I just want to just throw that out there.
And that's true.
I agree. And they are shining examples for the others to follow.
Right.
So that's why they put them up front. This is exactly the kind of citizens we want you to become. That's the message in there.
And you can be the next black something.
I wanted to do the review on Africa, but because last month's show, and I'm changing the subject just because I'm looking at the clock on the wall and the time is almost up. But damn, we can't do it. It just ain't enough time. Brother, if we extend over, how much time will we have? Additional 15 minutes?
At the moment, I have to have time to go in there and process and to get extra time. So it's not enough time for me to get in and extend it. So we have, right now, we're 4 minutes over. We still have about 11 minutes to go.
Okay. I just want to... And I'm going to keep it real brief. I just want to, even before I go on to the little thing about Africa, this is the review about Africa. The economic empowerment. I was going to add that as a submission this month to understand our economic power as a people, because y'all, we always criticize the people who come into our neighborhoods and take from our neighborhoods and then go back and spend in their neighborhoods. Now, the other part of that, which I don't think we recognize or we acknowledge enough, is that we are the employees in the workforce. There's a significant percentage of people that look like me and you that's out there in the workforce that's making wages. Those wages are taken from their community. Now, what we choose to do with them is up to us. That's why they advertise so hard and heavy to get us, to influence us to go back and spend those dollars with them to stimulate their economy. And, mm-hmm. I'm separating the economies now, because we're talking about economic empowerment. When you bring that money home, choose to keep it in your community. The community takes off because the cost of living in the poor communities, the cost of living in the poor communities has always been a lot cheaper than in the ritzier parts of the states and cities all over this nation. Your money spends further in your own community, even when you think it doesn't. And that's the part that I wanted to get into, because we'll go all the way across town to save a couple of bucks, but you don't realize how much you lost in terms of sleep, quality time that you could spend with your friends and families, the cost of fuel, the wear and tear on your vehicle, the lack of socializing in your own community, the things that you can build. Excuse me, y'all. The things that you can build within by venturing out. You know, when a business becomes a institution in the community, those are businesses that several generations have dealt business with this merchant, and they continue to do business with this merchant. You don't have those so much anymore, because the young people, the education falls on the old people. I'm going to point a finger now, y'all. The old people are responsible for educating the young people, period. Will y'all agree with that? Do you agree with that? The old people are responsible for educating the young people.
I say yes and no.
Brother Drew, would you agree with that? Okay, Brother Drew is indisposed at the moment. But the adults are responsible for educating the children.
Yeah, I agree.
But when the children become adults, the older people are responsible for educating those young minds, because they're still children. They're trying to figure it out. And it's a transition in there where they transition from irresponsible, independent children two independent adults. And if they get those lessons wrong in there, then they wind up playing catch up and losing ground so much of their lives, losing economic ground.
Yeah, let me jump in there with you real quick.
Go ahead.
Okay, you made some good, profound statements today. That's a pretty good point, because in the American system, they teach us, you know, that you stop teaching because this person is grown now. But that was a good point you made, because it made me see it in another light. We all going to be a child to somebody all our life, because, you see what I'm saying? We should look at it like that. We are children to somebody that's an elder. You see what I'm saying? So that's a good point. But the American tell, you know, hey, you move on, you grown, you don't need no more teaching, you don't need no more of this, you don't need no more guidance. You're going to find your own way. Wrong again. But you just showed me another point. Thanks.
And we glorify arrogance. We glorify ignorance. We glorify disrespect of the ones that should be teaching. You know, what's on the televisions now, you look at the interactions between the young people and the elders, and you see disrespect. You hear disrespect. And the kids going to mimic what's being fed to them. You got to break them away from those televisions. You got to break them away from the PlayStations, and you got to get some real core teaching, some real values instilled in them that's going to separate them from the crowd and help them become better human beings as a whole, you know, and ultimately better leaders in the future. Brother Drew, I think we've probably exhausted pretty much all the time we have, so I guess we better wrap it up before we get abruptly in.
That's right.
So, brother Tafari, amen. Hey, thank you, brother. Thank you for everything you did this evening, your contributions. I just can't say thank you enough, and I hope the listening audience, I know the listening audience enjoyed, you know, hearing what you had to say. So, thank you.
Brother, you know, it's a pleasure.
all right. And to the listening audience, I just say what I always say. Y'all stay strong, stay true. Choose what's right over what's popular. Brother Drew, the final word is yours.
Well, you know, I see we have some other callers standing by, and I'm missing, and we out of time. And that's one thing I didn't do. I didn't look at the caller board. I was stuck into the program myself. So we'll try to address that next week. We don't have time to take the caller, but we got people that lit up today. But we got 2 minutes, and so we don't, like I said, they're just gonna cut it off in 2 minutes. But we do appreciate the brother coming to expound on some knowledge and facts. We thank Brother Gigi for this program. You know, we do a lot of different programs, but this one here is one that I really enjoy because it's trying to reach our youth. And just looking back, if we knew these things, what we learning on this program tonight, if we knew this, man, hey, but we're going to make sure somebody else know it before we leave. So we appreciate you brothers that's on and giving of your time and support, and we appreciate the listening audience. Hey, we're going to say peace. And we out.
Peace.